My name is Andy, and this is the most magical podcast on earth. When I'm not on holiday at Walt Disney World, I'm planning a holiday to Disney. And when I'm not planning a holiday to Disney, I'm talking about Disney with other UK fans like me who make the trip to Orlando and the House of the Mouse. So if you too are potty for Pluto, well, then this is the podcast for you. Or maybe you're the Disney novice just thinking about or maybe planning or replanning your first ever trip to Walt Disney World and you don't know how many there are in the Seven Dwarfs. Well, then this really is the podcast for you. Every episode, I'll be chatting to other Disney superfans from around the UK to share their memories of their magical times, and we get all retro with this week's guest, Greg.
In the 90s, that kind of technology was mind-blowing. You know, we'd never seen anything like that.
Also going to be answering your Walt Disney World questions, getting the latest news from the parks, and loads of tips to make your trip the most magical trip ever. And make sure you keep in touch. Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are at PodMagical. This is the most magical podcast on earth as part of the Secret Recordings Network. We've got a brand new podcast coming out every other Friday, so make sure you've subscribed so you don't miss it. Of course, we'll be answering your questions. Even though we still can't go to Orlando and Florida and Walt Disney World, we'll still do your questions every time on the podcast. So get your notebook ready, make those notes. If you want to send anything over, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, PodMagical is where we are, which is what Vicky has done. Vicky is intending on celebrating her 40th birthday at Walt Disney World, and in particular would like to spend the day of her actual birthday in the Magic Kingdom and wants to know where she can get a glass of champagne. There is a problem. Okay, so you can't walk around Magic Kingdom with a glass of champagne. You can walk around Epcot with a glass of champagne from the France Pavilion, which would be very good. Well, actually, you can't at the moment because we've got to wear face masks. And if you want to walk around with food, you can't do that. You've got to sit somewhere and have your food. But let's think, OK, the world is back to normal again and you go in and you don't have to walk around in a face mask or being well. Where can you get a glass of champagne in the Magic Kingdom? You can't. You can't walk around with alcohol in the Magic Kingdom. Quick service places do not sell alcohol. So you can't do that. You can only drink alcohol where you've gone to a sit down restaurant. So, for example, Be Our Guest is a sit-down restaurant. Skipper Canteen is a sit-down restaurant. Liberty Tree Tavern is a sit-down restaurant. Or, here is my suggestion. So, even though you can't walk around with a glass of champagne, but I can see you want to take in the atmosphere. How about this? How about you book a table at Tony's Town Square, which is right by the entrance as you walk in at the top of Main Street, and ask to be sat on the outdoor patio. So there you can sit outdoors, maybe get a light meal or some snacks and a glass of champagne. And you can sit, take in the atmosphere of Main Street, watch the world go by, have a glass of champagne and celebrate your 40th birthday that way. So if you want a glass of champagne outdoors in the Magic Kingdom, that's an option. Tony's Town Square. Any questions? Let me know. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. PodMagical is where we are. Also the same place to go if you fancy being a podcast guest. We've got a brand new guest on every podcast with new memories every time. Even if you've not been to Walt Disney World for a long time, like this week's guest, it doesn't matter. We just love talking about Walt Disney World. If that's you, get in touch. We're looking for guests in the new year. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram is where to go to be a guest like this week's guest, Greg. So tell us, Greg, why you love Walt Disney World.
I think it's just the full immersive experience. And I think it's just the attention to detail. I think once you go in, like many people have said, you kind of leave the real world behind. And it's everywhere you look, you're still part of that magic. There's no gaps. There's no behind. You know, you can't see behind around the edges. It's just all that detail and that, you know, watching the Imagineering series, you see how much effort goes into that. It's so much thought as well, I think.
Yeah. And that's the way Walt wanted it. You know, you're standing in Frontierland. You're not going to see anybody from Tomorrowland or anything like that. It's immersive is the word.
Yeah. And I think, you know, what was really interesting, you know, when they in Imagineering, they talked about, you know, Disneyland with the way they built, you know, the banks around the edges. So you couldn't even see the real world.
Yeah, kind of, they dug up all the dirt and piled it up so you couldn't see out. Because you've been to California as well, haven't you, and Paris?
Yes. I was 11 when I went to Walt Disney World.
Yeah.
So there's clear memories of it, but slightly blurry around the edges. As a teenager, I went to Paris, which was great, but didn't seem quite so magical. Maybe that's because I was a bit older. California, I really liked. I think because you knew that Walt had built that, you know, himself. But I think, you know, having not been since 11, I'd really love to go back to Walt Disney World and go and immerse properly again into that.
Now, this is what I'm excited about this week's podcast, because we're going to get really deep and retro. If you're a 90s kid, then you'll love this, because the last time you went to Walt Disney World was 1994.
That's right. Yeah, the last time and only time.
The last and only time. Now, I'm excited about this because I didn't actually get to go in the 90s. So, like, 2000 was actually the first time I ever went. And I see things like, especially Epcot. So what were your memories of, like, Walt Disney World in the 90s?
So we I put a scrapbook together, because I was only 11 when we went, so it's full of park maps and things, and it was great just looking back through photos as well. We started in what was then MGM Studios. That was our first day. And I think one of the first things we went on was the Great Movie Ride, which, yeah, you know, for a first experience was just like nothing we had ever experienced. You know, you were just in the midst of everything, and I, you know, kind of sad that that's now gone and things move on. But I watched back a ride on video, you know, on YouTube, and that brought back even more memories. And there was things like the Little Mermaid show, the Muppets in 4D was there at Hollywood Studios.
Yeah, still there. And Little Mermaid, some things never change.
Yeah, so that's kind of the key memories from there. I remember, you know, walking up Main Street the first time, and I think, you know, my mum crying having got us there. So yeah, I mean, we were fairly, well, not old, but, you know, so I was 11. My one of my sisters was 16. My elder sister was 19.
Right.
But it was. Equally, it was the perfect time to go, because we experienced everything, and it was great fun.
Yeah, you remember it, and you weren't too, like, cool to kind of, like, not enjoy it.
Oh no, not at all. I was right in the middle of it all.
So 1994, was it just MGM Studios, Epcot, and Magic Kingdom?
Magic Kingdom, yeah.
So there would be no Animal Kingdom.
No, we had 4 days there. So we did 2 days in Magic Kingdom, and then one in MGM and one in Epcot. Yeah, I think the Tower of Terror had not long opened. I wasn't brave enough to go on that. I'm not sure I'm brave enough now, to be honest. And I think Splash Mountain, looking back, had only been open a couple of years when we went. And to my shame, I wasn't brave enough to go on. My sisters went on with my mum, which is very funny, because my mum's not a thrill seeker at all.
But she went on and you didn't.
Yeah. And it's funny, because neither of my parents are, you know, thrill seekers. But I think that's what's amazing about it, is that you don't have to be. There's so much there. It's just that overall experience. I mean, I still have very fond memories of that. And Epcot was great, because it was just something so different, really. I think that's it's kind of educational without it being boring.
Yeah. You know? I think Epcot in the 90s was Epcot at its peak, I think. Obviously, there's all sorts of change happening now. Half of it has been ripped down and hopefully will be rebuilt. But I think in the 90s, that's Epcot was at its peak.
And I think, you know, looking now, I think, you know, that the there's the Frozen Ever After ride there. You know, that was Maelstrom, I think. Was that what it was called?
Yeah.
Before. So it was very much, it wasn't as Disney-fied, and it sounds really strange, but it was very much about those countries at that time. And I remember going to O Canada, the 360 vision thing, and again, you know, in the 90s that kind of technology was mind-blowing. You know, we'd never seen anything like that.
Was there an attraction about journeying through the body, if I'm not mistaken?
Oh yes there was, yeah. And you kind of got shrunk down and it was like a kind of simulator kind of thing, I think, because there was a film in the 80s, wasn't there, very similar to that, where you got injected into the body.
Inner Space,
I think that's what it's called, isn't it?
Yeah, because one of my favorite things at Epcot, the first thing I went was Honey, I Shrunk the Audience.
Oh yes, yeah. I think that was coming the year that we were there. The posters were all up, but what there was at MGM Studios then was essentially kind of like a kids' playground that was based on the set of Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. There was the nose of the dog, you know, was breathing, and then you could slide down leaves that were, you know, in the shape of slides and things.
I think that playground has now to go to make way for what is now Star Wars Land. I remember that being there as well. And I'm guessing Magic Kingdom hasn't really changed that much. Like walking down Main Street, probably a few less trees, and obviously new fantasy land at the back of the castle. But I guess not much else has changed. People Mover still there. Space Mountain still there.
Yeah, well, the People Mover was one of the first things we went on, I think, you know, in the Magic Kingdom. And what I have been thinking about this is, you know, when we went, there was no kind of preparation in the way that you do things now. We didn't know what was there.
Yeah.
You just kind of turn up and wandered around and went, oh yeah, I'll go on that and wonder what this is. You know, like, no, we'd had no idea what the Carousel of Progress was. You know, you got on and again, it was just, although even then that was kind of 40 years old, it was still like the animatronics were just incredible.
Yeah, still is. Yeah. You're thinking, I'm sitting in a theatre that's moving round. It's still,
well, I think that's
now.
You go in and sit down, don't you? And then you wonder, oh, I wonder what this is. And then all of a sudden, the whole thing starts moving. And I remember the look of fear on my mum's face on the People Mover when we went through Space Mountain, and she was terrified that we'd somehow accidentally got on Space Mountain.
Yeah, you're all right with People Mover, Mum. It's fine. Yeah. It's a good sit-down, go-through ride. That's fine.
But so just looking at the map now, so there was the 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, which I think is where the Runaway Mine Train is now, isn't it?
Oh, yes, of course, in New Fantasy. Yeah, behind the castle.
I remember going on Pirates of the Caribbean. We went on that twice because Dad and I went off on to that when the rest went on to Splash Mountain, and we enjoyed that so much we took them on that straight away afterwards.
Yeah.
When they got off.
And, of course, that was the days before the film came out. The film was based on the attraction way back then.
Yeah, and it was really funny then going back to Disneyland then, you know, in the early, you know, 2000s, and the re-theming of Pirates of the Caribbean. So there was a Jack Sparrow character added into that. And I think then you realise the details as well, but then from the film, where they'd taken, you know, set pieces out of the ride and put them in the film. And it all just kind of goes back to that level of detail, really, I suppose, isn't it? You know,
get
the perfection to get it right.
Yeah. Greg's on the podcast this episode. We'll chat more of your memories. I want to find out what else is in that scrapbook. Let's get a quick update from Disney World first, though, with quite a little bit of news to report, actually. Earlier this week, the International Association of Amusement Parks and Attractions Expo happened. This happens every year in Orlando. It was virtual this year. Doing the opening statements was Josh D'Amaro, who is the, let me get this right, Disney Parks Experience and Products Chairman. Yeah? So he gave us a little bit of an update on Walt Disney World projects, some of the stuff that's going on. Obviously, at Epcot, we are still waiting for Remy's Ratatouille Adventure. This is the one they've already got in Disneyland Paris. Was supposed to open this year. They said it's still on track to open next year. So was it always going to open in 2021, or were we just expecting it to be opening a little bit earlier? It looks very much complete anyway, but still on hold for that big opening day for that attraction. Maybe they're waiting for the world to get a little bit more back to normal. Also, he talked about the reimagining of Splash Mountain. Obviously, that is getting a Princess Tiana makeover. He was quoted as saying the reimagining of Splash Mountain has been expedited to ensure that all who visit the company's parks do feel welcome as well. So that's making a bit of a fast track to the overhaul of Splash Mountain, both in Walt Disney World and Disneyland in Anaheim, which is still not open, by the way. Also, he did mention that live entertainment will be back. Obviously, there's a lot of people who've had to be made redundant from shows such as The Lion King and Finding Nemo, but fingers crossed they'll be back in employment, and those shows will be back on soon, obviously with some social distancing in the audiences, first of all. Also, looks like fireworks could be coming back. There was more testing this week at Magic Kingdom over the castle, some fireworks testing one evening this week. We have got a bit of a glimpse into some of the forthcoming attractions. For example, the Guardians of the Galaxy attraction at Epcot. We did get to see what that looks like inside. A lot of the roller coaster track has been put down, and the pictures of it look very much like Rock and Roller Coaster with the lights on. There is going to be more to this. There's also been some footage of the actual ride being tested. But the big part of this is the cast of Guardians of the Galaxy need to film some special footage for the ride. Now, obviously, Hollywood has been put on hold, so they've got to wait until Marvel is back into the studio. There is going to be a new Guardians of the Galaxy 3. We think that's going to start filming in January. So obviously, when they start filming that, they'll start filming the footage that goes along with the writer. Bit of a wait for Guardians of the Galaxy at Epcot. Could be 2021 towards the end. More likely 2022, just a guess. Also talking about Epcot, remember that new restaurant that was supposed to open last year? The one that where you can dine in out of space, Space 220. That's still not open. Supposed to open last year, didn't open this year. Fingers crossed it's going to open next year. There's been some photographs of that, the inside of that restaurant, what that looks like. Also, we got a bit of a glimpse inside the Star Wars Galaxy Cruiser. It's not a hotel. There has been some artist impressions about what the inside of the cabins, they're not hotel rooms, what the inside of the cabins on the Space Cruiser looks like. All this, by the way, over on our socials, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Podmagical. And we're also expecting some news on the 50th celebrations. Obviously, October next year is when Walt Disney World and Magic Kingdom hits the big 50th birthday. We don't really know what they're going to be planning for that yet. Maybe they are still not quite sure how things are going to pan out. But there is an announcement due any time on what we can expect for the 50th anniversary. Now, at the time of recording this, that might have already been announced. By the time you're hearing this podcast, those details might have already been announced. So make sure you keep an eye on our socials for all the latest news. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Podmagical is where we are. And that's where you need to go if you fancy coming on the podcast for a bit of a chat. You want to be a podcast guest like Greg, who hasn't been to Walt Disney World for a very long time, which is why we're throwing back to talk about what it was like when he went for the first time in the 90s. He's even got a scrapbook, and you had a park map in there, and what else?
Yeah, and we've got our, you know, paper photo passes that you had to have, because you had to stand and have your photo taken as you went in, and it was like a passport photo stuck on a bit of cardboard.
And I remember the first time we went, we got the ticket. You say you got the 4-day ticket. I think we might have had like a 5-day ticket. And the thing was like, don't worry if you don't use all 5 days, because like the extra days, they'll be good for the rest of your life. You can come back whenever you want with those extra days. They're good forever. Not now, it's like the 14-day ticket. You go 14 days. When your 14 days are up, you're off. Sorry. Come in. Has it got the price on it? Have you still got the tickets with the price on it?
I know that parking was only $5, because I've got the parking tickets. I mean, this is super geeky.
Parking $5. Still, even then, that was quite pricey, I thought, for a day.
And it's got like an old-fashioned, you know, rubber stamp with the date on the days we were there.
Yeah.
Oh, here we are. Yeah, $134 it was.
For four days. That doesn't even get you one day now.
Yeah, and then they kind of chomped a bit out of the corner to say that you'd had
say you've been in. Yeah. So what about food? Do you remember any of the restaurants that you visited back
then? I don't remember anything about food. It's really funny. And so we stayed off site as well, because I don't even know what was there, you know, in terms of staying on site.
Yeah, the Grand Floridian would have been open, the Poly, the Contemporary definitely would have been open in then.
Yeah, and the Yacht and Beach Club it's got there. Yeah, so we just stayed in an apartment kind of thing. It was kind of a suites hotel, they called it. Yeah, and that kind of we just drove in every day. But you know, having, I think so much is different now. It's much more, you know, we're kind of planning ahead for a trip, and I think, you know, we could quite easily be immersed for 2 weeks.
Oh yeah, without even going in the parks, you can just walk around the hotels and eat your way around Walt Disney World. And did you go to Universal then, SeaWorld, anything
yes,
like that?
Yes, we went to SeaWorld. Which was, I remember that was the first, one of the first things we saw there was the manatees, which we didn't even know what manatees were before going to Florida. I think we spent ages just staring, watching them, because they're just something so different. And you know, even then, I mean, it seems crazy, but you know, traveling to Florida just seemed to be traveling, you're going, it felt like you were halfway around the world, you know.
Well,
it's not that far,
Yeah, now it's just like jumping on a plane to Spain or Florida. But like, 1994 was quite a
lot. And that was my first time on a plane. So, you know, kind of...
what a way to go.
Yeah. So, yeah, we went to Universal as well.
What do you remember about Universal?
I remember being terrified of the earthquake ride. I know now at Universal in California, it's kind of part of the studio tour. But in Florida then, it was just its independent ride. You went into a tunnel on a subway. And then the ceiling falls down and the oil tanker comes in, all of that kind of thing, and just being terrified.
Yeah,
I remember watching the Blues Brothers perform.
They're still there. They're still going.
In Universal. That was one of the best things we saw there as well.
Yeah, I think Blues Brothers and E.T. are the only things that have survived from probably 1994, I don't think.
Yeah, E.T. was a fantastic fantastic ride.
Yeah, that'll never go. Spielberg won't allow it.
Even then, I think Universal was slightly more thrill-seekery than Disney.
Universal back then was like a real behind the scenes of the movies, I remember.
Yeah.
Universal and MGM Studios, now Hollywood Studios, it really was taking you behind the camera, where a lot of that is gone now.
But I suppose things always change and move on, don't they? But it's still essentially Disney World, isn't it?
Yeah.
But just looking back at Universal, there was, I remember a thing with Chevy Chase where you did the sound effects thing. So you went in and the people pulled out of the audience and you had to record feet walking on gravel and that kind of thing.
Oh, right.
And they cut it together with a little scene from a film. It just kind of showed how they put the sound effects on.
Yeah.
As you say, it was very much about how films are made then. The big thing for me, Universal, I was a massive Flintstones fan at the time. And the Flintstones film had just come out with John Goodman and Rick Moranis. So they had the sets of that you could walk around. So there's photos of me with Fred and Barney looking pleased as punch.
And out of the three Disney parks, would you say you had a favourite between Florida, France and California?
Going to Disneyland, I, as I say, I really like it because you know that's what Walt built himself. But it's fairly small, I think, when you compared to Florida. I mean, it's just it's huge. So last time, when we were on our honeymoon, we went to California. We actually did the main park and then the California Adventure or something, the other half of it. We did that in one day, but we were just kind of there with relatives. And you can kind of do that more with that park.
Yeah, they're literally, you know, next door to each other.
Well, you just walk across a kind of connecting pavement and you're in the other park. That was good, but I think that from the look of it, I think it's more magic in Walt Disney World. I think because you're properly immersed into it.
Yeah.
But one of the best rides we went on in California was the Cars ride, which had not long opened. And I think, you know, it's based very much on the technology of Test Track, really. But it was just fantastic because you felt like you were in Radiator Springs. You know, you were in the film.
It is such a good... It's one of Disney's best rides is that ride, Radiator Springs.
Yeah, because it doesn't matter. Like, we were, you know, in our 30s and it was brilliant.
So all this talk about Walt Disney World, you are going back.
Planning for 2024.
Right, okay. Is that because you've got children or are you just waiting for the pandemic to be over? Or
yeah, so we've got two children. So by that age, they'll be about 6 and 9, which we think is just kind of a nice kind of age to...
That's a good age.
To take them.
Would you stay at Walt Disney World? Or are you going to stay off-site? Are you going to travel around Florida? What are your thoughts? What are your plans?
Well, my plan... I've got an overly complicated spreadsheet already.
Already?
Kind of looking at prices and monitoring them and seeing how if it gets cheaper nearer to when you book. Of course, that's all been thrown out this year.
Yeah.
So I'm still plodding on with tracking them. But I think the idea is to stay on site for 2 weeks and then maybe go off and do, you know, a day at Universal or maybe even across to the Space Center. But, you know, most of the time be on property, really.
Yeah. And I'm thinking as well in 2024, so you're probably going to be booking in 2023. You're only a couple of years away from probably booking it. And I'm thinking just the way that things are going at the minute, and if you look back historically, when Disney's taken a bit of a hit on something, they then really need to get people back. When things are really up and running and open again, which I'm guessing they will be 23, 24, I think there's going to be a lot of things to entice people to come back. I think you'll get your hardcore Disney fans who are going to come back anyway. But to really get those numbers and that capacity right up, I think there's going to be a lot of big incentives.
Yeah, well I kind of hope so. I mean, it's really hard at the moment, isn't it? Because, you know, the dining plans, you know, disappeared. And I mean, having listened to the podcast, I think, you know, it looks like, you know, Port Orleans, French Quarter, looks like a really nice place to stay. But, you know, you can't even look at prices for that at the moment.
Yeah.
They're just not even available. But, yeah, you just hope that a lot of the Disney magic things will kind of come back again. At the moment, it's kind of hard to see when that's going to happen. But, as you say, hopefully by even late 21 into 22, things will be a bit better and then... maybe even then the next couple of years after that,
yeah,
it will all hopefully be kind of back again.
Hopefully. Fingers crossed. Meanwhile, keep listening to the podcast. We'll keep you updated with anything that's going on. Any ideas? And when you're back from your trip in 4 or 5 years' time, we want you back on the podcast.
Absolutely.
We'll compare and contrast. All right. Lovely talking to you, Greg.
Oh, well, thank you very much. It's been a real pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
And have a magical day.
Thank you.
If you fancy being a guest, like Greg, it doesn't matter how many times you've been to Walt Disney World or the last time you went. If you just love talking about it, then share your memories with us. We're looking for new guests next year. Just send me a message, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, PodMagical. I'll get in touch and we'll share some Disney memories on the podcast next year. Don't forget, we've still got more podcasts to come before 2020 is out. Still some more podcasts to come this year. And some more top tips. We end the podcast with the top tip this episode. The top tip is tie a Tesco carrier bag to your buggy. Okay, well, it doesn't actually have to be a Tesco carry bag. But if you've got little kids and you're pushing them around in a stroller, as they call them over there, so say you've queued up, you've gone on Peter Pan, and then you come off and there's just a row of buggies, a row of strollers everywhere. How are you going to know which one is yours? Some people like to tie like a Mickey Mouse balloon to it so they can identify theirs. Well, a lot of people have the same idea. So how about tying something British to your stroller? That's why I'm thinking a Tesco carrier bag. How many Tesco carrier bags are you going to see in the Magic Kingdom? Not many. So it can be Asda or Iceland or Morrison's. Tie a British carrier bag or something British, not the Union Jack, to your buggy. And then that way you come off the ride and you can easily spot yours. And also, when the world gets back to normal and we go back to Walt Disney World, you'll be able to see who listens to this podcast. They'll be the people with a Tesco carrier bag attached to their buggy. That's the top tip for this episode. Don't forget, we've got top tips every episode. We've got new guests every episode and we've got new episodes every other week. So don't miss the next one. Hit that subscribe button. And also, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, if you could give us a 5-star review, that would be brilliant as well. And until next time, please stand clear of the doors.